Hey friends, we are your hosts, Leanne and Llewellyn, and welcome back to the Woman Friends Podcast. We are ending season 7 today with the conclusion episode, the second part of Chandler and Monica's wedding, and we are so excited. Last week was such a great episode with our brand new friends, Pop Culture 5, and this week, in order to keep up the festivities around the awesomeness that is the storyline, we decided, what better guests to bring on than our friends, the We Ship It podcast. We featured on their podcast a couple of months ago, talking top to bottom, front and back, all around, all about Chandler and Monica's relationship. So this is the perfect episode to have them come into to be able to talk about them getting married. And this is really a pivotal moment in their storyline. So we figured we'd love to have them on. We had such a fun time over at their podcast when we talked about those two. So yeah, we'll give you an official welcome here and then we'll cut you guys over to our interview with them.
Yeah, so We Ship It podcast, as we've mentioned, is hosted by Stephanie and Devin. And here's a little synopsis on kind of who they are. The We Ship It podcast dives into your favorite and not so favorite couples of all time. You know, Elizabeth and Darcy, Romeo and Juliet, Leslie and Ben, Ron and Hermione, or should it have been Harry and Hermione? You name it, let's talk ships. Will your ship sail or sink? Listen to find out.
I love that. So let's send you guys over and listen to our interview where we talk through this episode with the We Ship It podcast. All right, well, we are here with Stephanie and Devin. We are excited to have you guys. Several months back, we came on your podcast, We Ship It, and it was so fun to just deep dive into all things Chandler and Monica. And so, like we said to our friends earlier, we just think it would be perfect to have you guys come on an episode that so much features not only them, but is a pretty pivotal episode for a future storyline that's coming up to kick off season 8. So we gave them pretty much your podcast bio, but we'd love for you to be able to give a little bit more, add on top of that. Tell us a little bit about yourselves more personally, like whatever you want to put out there into the ether.
Sure.
But also how you came up with the idea of the podcast, how you decided to do it together. How do you guys know each other outside of the podcast? It'd just be fun to give our friends a little intro into you two.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Devin and I have known each other since like elementary school or something. And I don't know exactly which year, but we've been like best friends for a really long time. We got closer in high school mainly. And he was in my wedding and like all of this. And just like we're very, very close. And when 2020 kind of hit, and the world just like decided, you know, we're just going to shut everything down.
Go on pause for a little bit.
We decided that we were sad that we were long distance friends and we wanted to get together and have a reason to discuss what we were reading or watching or whatever and just like produce some fun content. So basically that's how We Ship It was born. I had to do a lot of convincing. but it was really fun. We'd get little tea and we read and prepare. Of course, it's a lot of preparation. Like we love We Ship It, but every episode is a different story or season or show or whatever it might be. So it's a lot of prep, but it's been a lot of fun. We've got to meet a lot of cool people through Bookstagram and through the podcast. So it's been like you guys, it's been a ton of fun. Friends was a huge endeavor for us, so we appreciate you coming on. That was very big.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was really good.
The prep work to have to do one episode of, and luckily you do get a lot of content out of it because you did get multiple relationships.
Correct.
But even if you only did those, what, four main ones, pretty much?
It was still a lot.
You're It's 10 seasons worth of content that you have to get through in order just to provide 4 episodes.
But you know what it does? Yeah. It forces
mad respect.
Thank you. It forces Devin and I to read the things that we should be reading anyway and keep up with the things. Like, everyone's like, oh, have you watched this? Have you read that? And I used to be like, nah. But now I'm like, yes, I have, because we're always like reading stuff. So it's been a lot of fun. I think that's...
Yeah, it's been a lot of dedication, but it's definitely kept us, A, in touch with each other, and then B, it's helped us just stay focused in our reading or in our watching, finding enjoyment in analysis again, because after college, you just go through like a dry season of like, okay, I'm kind of done with reading and stuff, especially two English majors that like we're done for a little bit. And so it's definitely given us motivation to get back into it and get into a little bit more of an analytical mind of sorts.
And who doesn't love couples, like, and judging the hell out of them? It's like, that's what we do. So it's a lot of fun.
It took a lot of convincing, and our podcast has come very far since the first episode.
Yeah, it really has.
I think you had a mic, like a good working mic, and I didn't have a good working mic. So there's definitely been
We've learned a lot
from the season
through this process, which I'm sure you both have too. It just it puts you through the ringer trying to figure all this out.
And you're trying to figure out your own cadence of how do I even speak on a podcast when there's nobody listening in real time, and thinking through the evergreen content versus things that are very, you know, seasonal, and it is such a like weird concept. Who comes up with the most ideas or pitches the most couples, you know, like as you guys are going through, who's the one that's like, oh, this
it's
or
definitely
that?
A process between I think
I
both
would
of
say
us.
Devin is most often in touch with the like modern like Bookstagram type couples. He's like, oh, this is a book I've seen all over.
He's on Book Talk.
Yes. So he knows. He like tells me, we got to read this book, like ACOTAR. He's like, we need to read this because everyone's talking about it. I'm like, what is that? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So then we read that. And Rising. For me, I'm one of those that comes in with a lot of the classic couples all the time.
Okay. Yeah. Because you do have a good balance of classical plus modern. You know, you're throwing it back to Jane Austen, but also... Yeah. Like, you know, Friends, and then up to current.
Yeah, it's very fun.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I love it. Such a good show. So for those of you who didn't, or maybe joining the one with Friends now and didn't know that we previously were on the one, the We Ship a Podcast, go back and find our episode of Chandler and Monica.
What episode that is.
Yeah.
And then listen to the rest of their Friends content, because they went through all of the main couples in Friends.
And we had a lot to say about Ross and Rachel. We really, really did.
I found myself wanting so badly to have also been on that episode, because I had so many things to say.
I know.
But you guys provided such good content. It was really good, and gets you engaged, and like you're like, no.
People probably hate us
after that one. But you know, it is what it is. Ross and Rachel. We'll talk about them today a little bit.
It is what it is.
Yes.
So the episode that they joined us on is episode 113. So
113.
You guys
can
go check that out and listen to them chat about Chandler and Monica.
Yeah. And look at the rest of their backlog too, because they've got, like I said, some good classic, like Elizabeth and Darcy. Come on.
You know, he's my favorite.
I love it.
Yeah.
always. Awesome. Okay, well, Llewellyn, let's go ahead and jump into this episode, because I'm sure we have a lot to say. I have a lot of little fun facts, so let's do it.
I'm excited.
Me too.
All right, so for our friends out there, we've mentioned this before, Leanne and I have different versions of this episode for some reason. So I don't have a soft open.
I'm curious to know what
Me
I'm
too.
Missing.
I'm curious to know what you guys are missing too. but I don't have a soft open, so I'm assuming this starts when we're still in the bathroom, because last week we left off on they found the pregnancy test and it's positive. So we start in the bathroom. Phoebe
sifting through the garbage.
Yes. Phoebe and Rachel have just discovered this test. And Phoebe states that this has to be the worst wedding day ever. The bride is pregnant, the groom is missing, and both of them agree in that moment that they cannot tell a single soul about this. That's all I have in the bathroom.
I have to say, I'm so sorry. I think I mentioned on our episode. This thing where people take important information and just don't share it or lie
this
about it.
This has been her. She's been on this hill
stand it.
For a while
like,
now,
Chandler
guys.
And Monica, the starts of their relationship. Like, everything falls apart because people, like, the whole Joey not proposing thing. I just... I don't want to spoil anything for people who are watching with you, so you can cut that out.
It's
if you
a 30-year-old, so
yeah, I was gonna say
I think it's all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's my one thing with Friends: love it to pieces, but they gotta stop lying. Anyway, that's my spiel.
Yeah,
that's good. That's
I also
good.
Think it should have been like a pretty big clue that when Rachel kind of gets like for a second in the bathroom,
she
kind
pauses,
of puts her hand to her stomach too. And I'm like, if you're looking at the subtleties, you would have gotten that it wasn't Monica.
Yeah,
I
did try and pick up on those subtleties this time because she almost like she covers her mouth and I think puts her hand on her stomach and like expecting like, oh my gosh, she's going to think that like she's going to know that's me. Like, assuming that Phoebe is going to call her out on the spot. And then she says, Monica, I'm like,
everyone.
Well, she also mentions, like, it can't be anybody but Monica because I took the trash out last night. Like, why is Rachel taking Monica and Chandler's trash out in their bathroom? So,
doesn't even live there.
Right. All these
little hints. That is such a weird.
But I love one thing that I found funny was Phoebe's cat robe.
Yeah.
Their robes looked so cozy in that scene, too. They just looked very bundled. I was like, man, I want a robe. That sounds amazing.
I just love that it's a huge subtlety in terms of her smelly cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So for those of us that have, like, the other DVD set, I guess maybe the regular one, I'm not even sure, right here it would have gone to... essentially their intro song, but it was a shortened one.
Yes.
It was like short intro, short credit,
it just showed
things
like
that.
Images
and it was
of the...
essentially just in the chorus, like the chorus to the end, and that was it, as opposed to the whole lead up. Mm-hmm. There was no like first verse. So it was very quick.
They wanted to get to the meat of the episode. Like, they're like,
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
for sure.
They don't want to waste
and
time.
Do you know if this aired like back to back or was
it
like
did.
A week?
It was, they both
it
aired on
back
the same
to back.
Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that could have been potentially why they just had a shorter lead in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm wondering because last week there was on, well, especially on Llewellyn's, there was no outro or tag scene. It was this next week on Friends.
Yeah,
so I'm
that's
wondering
true.
If they only added that to the DVD version because in real time, if the episodes were airing back to back, they wouldn't have. Would they have really been like next time on Friends and then the next episode starts?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they need the lead in. So that was really confusing. But
I wonder how many people
they did air on the same
in
day.
For this because it must have been like the thing people were waiting to see was Chandler and Monica.
I would imagine. Yeah.
I can find that out
that's
real quick.
That's something we miss with streaming episodes and shows now. You don't get that, like, the whole world is watching at one time, you know?
Yeah, I
30.05 million U.S. viewers.
What?
Wow, go U.S.
That's one.
USA.
USA.
But this week, I introduced an inquiry project to my students, and I gave each group a different question. One of the questions was, how has streaming, like, entertainment, just the internet in general, and then like online shopping, how has that changed culture? And one of the things I brought up was the streaming services and how has us being able to like binge watch changed our culture versus having to wait for that episode every week in the anticipation of what's going to happen. And Friends is a perfect example here with like, they leave us on cliffhangers and now we can just go to the next episode. Whereas like, man, if I had to wait,
We also, that's such a great tie-in too. Last week we were talking to a different group of friends about the idea of how many storylines would have been cut if Friends was made for streaming versus TV. Because in streaming, every show now that's a streaming show is 8 to 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're only keeping the main bulk of the story that they want to tell because there's so many storylines in Friends. I mean, every part of like the middle of any season is sort of just like
them doing random
There's a lot of episodes in there where you have a lot of storylines that are like, I don't understand what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Why are we watching this? But they just had to have the content because they signed up for 24 episodes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that is such... That's an interesting conversation too of like, yes, it changed, but it also changed shows themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because we're not doing like network shows anymore. I mean, there are definitely some that are on. There will always be TV shows, but there's a lot of them that have moved over to just streaming shows. And that is such an interesting concept as well.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah. All right, so heading into the main part of the episode, we start in Joey's apartment, where the girls have come in to inquire how it's going with finding Chandler. Ross says Joey doesn't know, his parents don't know, so Rachel asks, or basically tells them, like, I need to tell Monica because I don't want her to start getting ready. But Ross is insistent that they cannot do this and asks how much time she needs to stall Monica before basically telling her, I need 2 hours. So Phoebe pipes in that.
Yeah.
Right. So they kind of move to the hallway, and Phoebe threatens Ross in this moment and tells him, or no, sorry, I'm getting this whole episode is like running together. Phoebe pipes in and tells her that she's going to go with him because clearly he's tired and sucks at doing this.
Yeah, well, she's not wrong.
You got one job, man.
I think
so in the apartment. No, go ahead. No, go for it.
Okay, I wanted to ask what you guys thought about Rachel's short hair. You may have talked about this before, but her with the short hair, do we like it? Do we not? What do we think?
Okay, in a previous episode we did bring this up because Rachel or Jennifer herself said that she regretted that haircut because she didn't feel as like sexy young. Or like womanly with it. Like she felt kind of like kiddish because it was shorter.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there are episodes and scenes where I'm like, okay, Rachel, like, go for it. Like, get it, girl. And then there's others where I'm like, yeah, that doesn't really fit her. And I don't know if it's a mixture of the storyline or if I'm just putting my own, like, is it just, am I flaky when it comes to my own opinion? Yeah. No, I don't know.
Well, I don't know either because it was the first time, this scene was the first time I even realized she had short hair. So I don't know if there was something off about it in the scene when she was in the guy's kitchen or what, but I noticed it. I think it might have been the outfit, the way it was, and I actually liked it.
Mm. The blue camo?
Yeah, I was like, okay, I can see myself, you know, in the early
2000s. She looked very tan.
So I liked 2000s. It. But also, a deeper thing I wanted to bring up. We can talk more about this later. Do we think that running away from this fits Chandler's character?
Okay.
I don't.
That's such a great question.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
We have seen a lot of growth from Chandler. And we also talked about this last week, too, because we were like, there seems to be, like, so many random things that characteristically didn't line up or seem to be almost like callbacks to old characteristics of our friends. And I could easily see how like Chandler being like the runaway is one. We also mentioned last week how Monica kept not trusting Rachel with the things that were assigned to her specifically and kept like superseding Rachel to try and get other people to come in and like, anybody else want to take this
job?
She's
like, those are my jobs.
Those are my tasks. And she's
those
like,
are all things
I know.
That I'm in charge of.
And we're like, we've seen a lot of like growth in Rachel. We've seen a lot of growth in Chandler. And it felt like another one of those things where, again, you have to expand the storyline. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-episode part one and part two. They jinx it at the beginning because they're like, man, I was expecting you to freak out, and he said so was I,
and then
what happens, of course he gets freaked out. It does seem kind of weird. I don't know, Llewellyn, do you carry the same opinion?
I mean, yeah, I think another thing we mentioned last week was with Chandler especially, like, we have seen a lot of growth, but even in just like the episodes we've watched, we've seen a very little amount of Chandler, just based on, we think, things that were going on in Matthew Perry's own personal life. So it was refreshing to have the comedy that he brought last episode with the little, you know, little jokes he'd insert, you know, like we're the Bings and everything. But I think to go back to your question, is this runaway like in his character, I think it was, And I'm not surprised that they used that as an option, just because it was somebody that Chandler had been, you know, running out of relationships. You know, when they first fought, we mentioned communication was their biggest thing,
right?
Their biggest lack. When they first fought, he wanted to be done, but she's like, no, we just talk through it. So I think it's like a callback to who Chandler was, but I don't think it's who he's going forward.
I agree. I think it is a big callback. And I think it's also meant to be like another pillar in his growth.
Showing you that he didn't run away, you mean, in the end?
Yeah. Correct. And even when he's faced with, which we didn't even get to just yet, when he's faced with the news, I won't necessarily get to that because I'm sure we're going to talk about it. It's another callback into, okay, he's accepted this and is now growing.
That's fair. It could be a good contrasting thing. I just, when the whole thing, I'm just imagining like what this did to America that's tuning in and watching this and probably super pissed at Chandler. But I think probably the reason they did it, you're right, is to show how he's grown past that, because he felt the tendency to run away and then he didn't, he like stuck it out. So that's fair.
And I think, and we'll talk about this later too, but I think his reasoning for it makes sense in the moment too.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when we get to that scene, I'll definitely bring that up.
Yeah. All right. So back in the apartment, Monica is ready to start doing her hair and her makeup, and Rachel, you can kind of see in her face, is trying to figure out a way to stall her. So she decides to just pretend cry and saying, you know, the, I feel like typical thing that happens with Rachel, like, I'm never going to get married. And Monica doesn't care and just tells her, you're going to find the right guy. Like, let's continue. So Rachel tries again by telling her, maybe I'll just become a lesbian. And Monica thinks any girl's going to fall for you. Like, just whatever. It's fine if that's what you want to be. Still not caring. And it's not until Rachel
just
says, maybe I'll just sleep with Joey. And this makes Monica freak out and say, are we, like, are you okay?
I love that Joey was the trigger.
Yes, I love that that's the trigger for her. It just snaps her out of her like dead focus on me, myself. Because this really is Monica's moment to just relish in
it is
being selfish for a moment, because she's so much of like the giving, giving, giving.
Yeah.
And it's her time to really like shine. And especially because of like her family dynamics, like Ross was always the one that was like glorified, and now she's like, this is my moment.
Stop
Don't
it.
Take it away from me.
That's funny.
I wonder how early this timeline is, because the fact that she like, it feels like she wakes up and wants to put on her makeup. I'm like, isn't your skin going to get oily?
Right.
Like, what is the timeline for today? Right. Shouldn't that be the last thing that you're doing? But yeah.
I also thought it was cool that this is random, completely random tangent, but I like that she does her own makeup for her wedding. Like, a lot of brides don't do that, but Monica's just like, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it right. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Are you guys both married?
Me. I'm married.
No.
Did you do your own makeup for your wedding?
No, I suck at makeup. That's why, because I can't do it. But I was like impressed.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't trust myself.
Exactly. No.
That's probably Monica's,
Monica's
like control.
That's what I was thinking. Like, that's she wants to control it. Yep.
Yes.
All right, back at the movie studio, Joey is desperately trying to get out of work by 4 p.m. He tells his director that he's officiating his best friend's wedding. The director doesn't care. He spins it into his own wedding and saying, you know, he calls his bride to be his best friend. Still doesn't care. So he switches ideas and tells him he's having transplant surgery for his hair. It's not on his head. The director says,
I love that it's such a Joey though. Like, that's typical Joey. Like, I'm having surgery. What type of surgery? Transplant.
You're supposed to be at work on Monday. What are you
My
supposed to
transplant?
Yeah.
So bad.
You're not bald. It's just like a classic, like, Joey.
Yeah.
Not so thinking good before he speaks. The director doesn't get it, doesn't buy anything he's saying, but he's telling him they're probably going to be out by 4 anyway because they only have to shoot one scene. And his partner's a pro, so they'll be done quick. And we quickly pan to his partner, Richard, who is not in prime form. He is very much wasted. And it's clear that this is not going to go well. So then outside, Ross and Phoebe are having a difficult time finding Chandler, and she points out some person that she thinks is him. That's a woman. Ross mentions something on the side of the road that I can't think of the name of right now. Fire hydrant as him.
I think this is the scene that we don't have.
I don't know this scene.
I don't know this scene either. Explain it to me in detail.
So they're walking outside. It's very quick. That's probably why you don't have it. They're walking outside and Ross or Phoebe sees like a lady standing off in the distance and she's like, oh, there's Chandler. And he's like, are we just picking any random thing that's Chandler now? And he looks down at a fire hydrant and he was like, oh my gosh, Chandler, I'm so glad we found you. And then she gets the idea that he's playing a joke on her. So they stop to think, what is the last place if we were Chandler that we would want to hide? And then it quickly pans to his office.
That's where we like pop in on is just the next scene is the office.
They just automatically know that he's at his office.
Yeah, that's great.
No, it's just like a moment that they're outside and he's like, where do you think he'd be? Here. So
it's kind of like a segue into the office.
It is. So we're there and Ross asks, so this is what your office looks like. Because I don't think any of the friends
because
know
I still don't know what he does as a job.
So the name on his office door is Mike Smith. So they didn't even like put his own nameplate on the door.
Wait, do you guys not have the scene where he points that out?
Nope.
Oh no.
My gosh, is that another? Okay. At the very end of this, they're walking out.
I'm just going to quit hosting this podcast.
I'm so
just going to let Llewellyn do the rest of it because I don't have all the scenes.
Wow.
It's literally the last, like they're walking out the door and Ross notices the nameplate and he's like, who's Mike Smith? And Chandler's like, I could have swore this was my office.
Oh gosh.
We did not get that at all. So I was like, I thought this was like a fun fact.
Yeah, like a mistake.
Yeah, is that like a cover up in terms of were they just like making up on the spot? Like, I don't know what the
improvising
improvising about like the location that they're in kind of deal. Like they were just going off.
Maybe I wonder if
or is that like in the script?
I wonder if this episode, like when it originally aired, because they aired on the same day, if the version I have is what everybody saw, and then when they split it, they just took little pieces out.
Maybe.
I have no idea, but seem like such little things to have taken out. But
yeah.
Anyways,
it'd
in
be
the
weird
office,
because I feel like if you split an episode, you're wanting to bulk up both sides so that they each equal like the right amount.
It is strange.
Right. As opposed to like taking them away. I don't know. So weird.
All right. Well, we've reached the scene that nobody else knows.
No, you're fine. I do. And this is where I was getting at. Because Chandler explains his fear of the Bings in this little piece. And this scene in quote unquote his office. and he's fearful of following in his parents' footsteps. And just acknowledging the likelihood that marriages are only made to fall apart. And he just feels overwhelmed by how big it is to get married. Mm-hmm. It like was like a train coming and just hit him of how big it is to be called the Bings and therefore feel like he's on the path to failure.
Like his parents.
So I just found like I understood where he was coming from in this sense of like anxiety almost about the fear of getting married. That's why I'm saying like I don't necessarily agree that him leaving was not part of his character. Like I could see that, but I understand this concept of a fear that is driving him away is fear of failing and fear of ending up like his parents, because we know that his parents kind of like, you know, messed him up a little bit.
Yeah, not great.
So I did like that character element of Chandler in this moment.
Yeah, I like how he he brought in, you know, he mentioned his parents' failed marriage, but also like, look at you, Ross, and like your three marriages that have failed. And he like was able to like pull on everything that was around him that he knew of. And so just knowing, you know, also probably thinking of himself in the past, like I don't commit to things because of these reasons, like it's so big. And so Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it is. I see where he's coming from in wanting to run. But again, back to the, this would be a great moment of communication between the two of them, or any of them, really. But, you know, we're all human.
Yeah, he could have told somebody that that's the fear he was having, as opposed to just like dipping. Sure. But I do love how Ross handled it. The fact that he just kind of was like, okay, that is a big concept. Like the idea of becoming the beings that you are hooking your life to another person for forever is a huge concept. You're committing your life to someone. So let's do one small act at a time to get you there. Mm-hmm. I actually thought it was a brilliant strategy. I thought Ross was on point with that.
It's great. And then you get to the later scene where he's like, well, the last step now is getting married. So good luck.
He could have even broke that down. He could have said like, first thing you're going to do is walk down the aisle.
Yeah.
The next thing you're going to do
stand there.
Is just give your vows. You love Monica. Just tell her how you feel.
Yeah.
And the next is say I do.
Yeah. It's great.
Cool. All right. So we basically just described that whole scene. So we're leaving to go back to the apartment. And Rachel is still trying to stall Monica, and she's just over it. She has to get ready now because they have to be at the hotel in an hour. So Rachel panics, tries other routes, but before she even gets anywhere, Monica calls her out for hiding something because Rachel's not very good at stalling. So Rachel starts telling her that, look, we're all going to be here for you. We love you. And she gets the words out, we've lost Chandler. When Phoebe opens the door with a thumbs up and Rachel ends it with Chandler's vest. We've lost Chandler's vest. In the panic.
And she accepts it so
she's
quickly.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's like, but I thought the worst had happened. Face, though, it's like,
The worst had happened. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she is like genuinely panicked about the vest.
Could you imagine if she would have...
Could you imagine?
I mean, luckily, the moment that she's told she can't do anything about it because they're in the middle of their wedding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to it, but yeah.
Yeah, so over in the studio, Joey is working on the last scene and dramatically falls. Like, he's ready to be done, so he's doing whatever he can to make the scene speed up. And the director wants to run it again because they didn't get it the way they wanted to. So Joey begs his partner to pull it together, get it done, and he agrees to do that, but then is still so wasted that he like is throwing his props all over the place. Then in the bridal suite, we're at the hotel now. Phoebe is awkwardly sitting in this little like powwow with Chandler's parents, and I don't even remember what they talked about, but they were bantering.
It doesn't matter, but of all people to be like put in that situation and be able to handle it,
Phoebe.
Like the most uncomfortable setting, and it's just Phoebe trying to like gauge the tension between the two. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they all did look stunning in this scene.
They did.
Yes, I was just about to bring that up.
The bridesmaid dresses, so you mean, good. And everything, they're beautiful. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that, and I love them.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah, one of my later questions was going to be like, what are your thoughts on like the decor and the colors that were chosen for this
one? I love it.
It's all gold and off-white. What it was,
except for the bridesmaids dresses.
I think
dresses.
It's the bridesmaids dresses only... that stood out to me the most, too. And I don't know, have we talked about Monica's dress yet at all?
No. Not yet, no. We did when... in the episode where they went and shopped for it, because technically the one that they shopped for wasn't the one that they got at Kleinman's, like the whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So it's all different.
That sale,
but we haven't talked about it in like this episode. Yeah.
I think it's a pretty dress. I think like it's a little understated, but I really like it for the time period. Like I think it fits
the
time period really well.
I thought it was very basic and plain. Not in a negative sense, but it was just,
basic.
It was very
Monica. It was
Monica.
Basic. Yeah,
it was plain. Like, no.
It was underwhelming.
But, well, I mean, it is a little bit underwhelming in the sense like this was her perfect dress. But I do think it fits Monica's personality very well in that it's very clean fit and very natural in its... I don't know, like in its form and stuff, there's no like flashiness to it, which you don't expect that from Monica. You would expect that from Rachel, but not necessarily from Monica.
Yeah.
I felt like they could have played off of her figure a little bit more.
Maybe.
I felt like for Monica, I mean, Courtney Cox is a stunning
woman. Yeah.
I just felt like they could have picked a picked a better dress.
Yeah.
I just think it was kind of
a little plain.
It was too plain and understated, especially for, which is interesting because it was detailed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the dress had stuff on it, so it was detailed, but way too understated.
I wonder how they chose it. Because if you have 30 million people like logging in or like tuning in for this, you want it to be stellar, you know? I don't know.
Yes.
And it was pretty.
I agree.
It was pretty. Very, very of pretty. The time, I think, the cut and everything. But I just, it was a little bit like, you know.
We're on a budget. We're spending it on the bridesmaids' dresses.
Evidently.
Seriously.
All right. So Monica comes out in her wedding dress and the phone rings and it's Joey asking if Chandler is back. And he's really hoping he's not because he can't get off set. But he is. So Rachel starts to panic because she realizes that Joey is probably now not going to be there. And she realizes she has to go find a new minister and quick. So we hop over to the groom's area and Ross is still playing this one thing at a time game with Chandler. Like, look, you're in a tux. That's a good thing. And then Chandler asks, like, well, what's next? Getting married? And Ross nods. Yep, that's the plan. So he starts to panic and Ross tells him, like, look, you can do this. But Chandler was still panic look in his face, heads for the door for some quote unquote fresh air.
This scene really, I don't know if it was just me, but I really saw, so I just read Matthew Perry's memoir. And it like changed my perspective on this show and just everything a lot. And this scene I really saw in his face, just like I know he was supposed to look tortured because he's about to get married, but for the first time I felt like, oh, you can tell something's going on with him. I don't know if it was just the bags under his eyes or what. It worked in the scene, which is kind of sad to say, but it was just one of the first scenes I noticed. Oh, rough, you know? Sad.
Yeah, if you, after doing his, after reading his memoir, you'll watch season three up till now in a completely different light because of all that he was like going through, which, and it's interesting that you say that too, because this is probably, and what Llewellyn's point was earlier, this is probably the first episode in quite a while where we've had like a Chandler driven storyline. Like, yes, it was, they were getting married, but Chandler was the driver in the storyline with him like running away.
Leaving. Yeah.
And it actually, like last episode, he was hitting like his humor points in a way that he hadn't been. And so we think he was like kind of coming out of maybe another one of his maybe rehabs at the time that they were filming. Sure. But I'm sure, you know, 3 years and more worth of ups and downs. I mean, it just takes your toll on a body.
Yeah, it
does. So that is interesting that you say that, because you can kind of tell just in even his acting and in his delivery, which is so unfortunate because he's such a beloved character. So that is, Stephanie, to your point, like, yeah, that's a good point.
It's sad.
It is sad.
Yeah. So we cut to the hallway and Chandler lights a cigarette. Remember days when cigarettes were inside?
Yep.
Fresh air.
He hears Phoebe and Rachel coming down the hall, so he decides to hide in the closest area, which is the ice bucket closet thing. The girls stop right in front of the door, and they're talking very loudly about finding a minister, and Phoebe reminds her not to mention Monica being pregnant.
Because I'd say the whole line if I was, don't mention that she's pregnant.
Very loud, yeah.
I love sitcom world, man. I wish I lived in one.
The convenience and the lack thereof, no communication.
Yeah. So as they walk away, Chandler opens the door and is understandably shocked. So we head to the lobby for like a quick scene of Rachel looking for a minister, and she finds this Greek wedding. I'm not even going to mention the names. And ask the minister.
I was wondering if you were going to try and pronounce them.
No.
Okay, well, I will for a second, though. When she goes to find the groom's, the new last name, one of them is Anastasicus, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. Anastasicus. And that was Jennifer Aniston's father's original last name before he legally changed it to Aniston.
Wow.
So it is her original last name.
That's hilarious. Really? Wow.
Went before they like came over. And then the other name that she gave for Chandler when she said, and Chandler Acidophilus is actually a type of gram positive bacteria.
Oh my gosh.
So, a couple of fun facts on those last
names. Those are very fun.
For Greek.
Wow.
Sorry for my mispronunciation to any Greek friends out there.
Didn't realize she was Greek.
Me neither.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Mm-mm.
Interesting. Anyway, she asks this minister if he can marry her friends, and she says yes. In fact, they are Greek Orthodox, even though they're very much not. So we head back up to the bridal suite, and Ross comes in saying hi to everybody before asking if they have seen Chandler.
His dad! And...
the Jack. Dad!
Oh, gosh.
Shouldn't you know, son? They're playing hide and seek.
That's
he's lost
cheating,
them.
Son.
Yeah. Very so loudly. But Monica walks out, and Ross is just beside himself with how good she looks. And mm-hmm. she responds with her classic, I know, before mm-hmm. asking how Chandler's doing. And through gritted teeth and a sweaty brow, Ross tells her that he's doing great. Before asking Phoebe to the hallway because he needs her help finding Chandler again.
Just sigh.
Yeah. So back at the studio, I think this is our last scene in the studio. Joey is just ready to be done, but the director isn't budging. They need to get this scene just right. So he walks into Richard's room or his dressing room. And he appears to have only gotten more drunk. I feel like in every time we see him, he's a little bit more drunk. And Joey lies to him and says, yep, director just said we're done. We're wrapped. The car's outside. Let's go. Picks him up, drags him out the door.
Honestly, good for Joey.
Yeah.
Brilliant. He's like, I need to get out of here. You don't know any better. Let's wrap this up.
Let's do it. So back in the hotel hallway, Ross spots Chandler, tackles him to the ground, and then threatens him with the ass kicking that he had before, which I was wondering when that was going to come in. But Chandler tells him he's not walking out on Monica because
I love this. I'm sorry.
He knows he knows what's going on. He overheard Phoebe and Rachel, and Ross is confused because he has no idea what they're talking about. But he softens a bit when Chandler tells him that she's pregnant. And Ross points out that Chandler isn't freaking about this, which I think we all would have thought he would have freaked out. But he told him he was. So he went to the gift shop to buy more cigarettes and reminds them to look at the bigger picture because he's not supposed to be smoking. And when he
That's
spotted
a great
the,
line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When he spotted the I Love You New York onesie, he knew that there was no way that something that fit that was that small to fit in something that little could be scary. And so he bought it so that he could tell Monica that it's okay. Everything's going to be okay.
Dad Chandler just melts my heart. This scene melts my heart. Anytime that the guy who's either running away, scared, a little bit moody, whatever it might be, and then they're just like a loving father. I'm just like, oh, I can't. How cute. And he fits that mold. He really does.
He sure does.
This is such a great scene because there's like, it starts off so humorous with the Ross getting his opportunity to kick Chandler's butt and going for it all the way down to like just the sweetness of, like you said, Stephanie, him being a dad, like him in that dad mode, but then also like the little cute, his little onesie, but then also saying LOL that like, how could something that small be so terrifying? Right. And every parent ever is probably like, ha, ha, ha. You know, like, you don't even know. So I just thought it was all around like a good scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And it's definitely showcasing his growth as a future husband, as a potential future dad. Like it's definitely showing his growth as a character from someone who was running away because of living up to his parents' expectations. And now he quote unquote learns that he's going to have his own child, and he's wholly accepting of this and realizing that he doesn't have to fall in his parents' footsteps. He doesn't have to raise a child who he messes up as bad as his parents did.
Mm-hmm. All right. The final like scene, whole scene is the wedding. Finally made it to the wedding.
Woo.
Chandler comes in first, arm in arm with his parents, Ross next with the girls, and states that he doesn't think he's ever walked down the aisle where it doesn't end in divorce for him.
Which is untrue, because technically in Susan and Carol's wedding, he did walk her down the aisle, and they don't end in divorce.
That's true.
Wow. Way to call that
out.
Good
point.
Nice. Thanks. And then lastly, Monica comes in with her parents, and she spots the different minister because it's very obvious, panics a little bit, but Chandler reins it back in.
I will mention something I have always loved about their relationship. Just paralleling him getting down on his knees and then her getting down on her knees to propose to each other. In this moment, she doesn't like walk the steps up to him. He comes down the steps to greet her before they both go up together. And I just love that. It's such a small thing, but it just like really just reiterates their equality as partners, and I think that that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Very small, but it reminded me of when they proposed to each other and took it from that partnership mentality, you know? It's a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good call. So the minister starts with the...
Devin, what were you going to say? Yeah, you had some. You were going to say something.
Sorry,
too.
Yes. It was not as good as Steph's. So.
What is it?
That's, I was like, ooh, maybe they'll just like cover that up. But no.
called out.
Never no, mine it. Was going to be, I love that when Rachel is talking to the minister before this scene, she's like, oh, nice hat.
Yes.
Because you said something about him, like, she clearly knows that this is not the right minister. Right, yeah. Or obviously it's not Joey. But like, the big clue to her is that
this giant
he's
hat.
Dressed yeah, in yeah, whatever yeah. And Rachel was just like, oh, nice hat.
It's great.
Doesn't at one point Chandler look over him and be like, Joey?
Yeah.
It's like a joke. It's like a joke. There, yeah. Yes.
Oh, that's funny. It's great.
All right. So this minister starts with the line, dearly beloved, we're gathered here today. And then Joey bursts in, still in his costume, and says, hey, that's my line. So he rushes to the front.
So great.
Jokes about being late for the costume, like it'll all make sense Memorial Day weekend 2002. shameless plug of his own movie.
I want to see that.
I know. Looks like a great movie. Gary Oldman, come on.
I know.
Yeah. He continues. He doesn't follow script at all because he forgot his script in the dressing room. So he starts by dropping the secret that they should probably get this thing started before the groom disappears again. And Monica, as you mentioned, can't show panic, but she does in her eyes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Joey, but really?
It's a classic Joey slip, too.
He doesn't even notice that he's aired. And it's like, you could, if you said that at anyone's wedding, no one would probably laugh. But if he's Joey, he can't help it. He's just Joey.
Yeah.
And then Monica gives it back to Chandler in a vows.
So Joey starts with the vows. And as Monica's grabbing hers, she asks about him taking off, but she deflects. Monica gives her vows, which are very sweet. They're very tender, but ends with, unless you really don't want to, which is her. So Chandler turns to take his vows from Ross, but decides to go it alone. Doesn't take them, which Ross looks very upset about.
Taken aback. I have one job.
Yeah. But Chandler comes in very sweet. You know, he thought this would be the scariest thing he's ever had to do, but he's absolutely sure that this is what he wants and is ready for whatever life throws at them. And then he jumps straight to the end and kisses her, which throws Joey off even more. They exchange I do's, they put rings on, all out of order, but then are finally pronounced husband and wife.
I love how he can't get his order correct.
I know, he never, but so I love in Monica's, like, in her vows that she ends with my friend. I just think that's perfect for the show. It's perfect for them. Like, it just was very heartfelt, and it put me in that moment when all the silliness sometimes can take you out. It was very much like, right. My friend. Yeah. And I was like, ah, love that.
It was very sweet.
And I love that Chandler, he says that the easiest, the most simplest thing, or when it hits him that this is a very simple task, is seeing Monica walk down the aisle. Like, that was his, like, call to understanding of how simple it is to just say yes to the other, to your other person.
Yeah.
But I do have to laugh at Joey being... And, he's the perfect Joey officiant.
Yes. Yes.
And getting the order wrong, and just his little quips here and there throughout the piece.
Yeah.
I will say too that it is like kind of a little bit of a spoiler, but like Monica in her vows mentions she calls Chandler her soulmate twice, but in the episode called the one where Joey tells Rachel, Monica says she doesn't believe in soulmates, so it's going to be a little bit of like a continuity drift. It's later on, so it's like, okay, but it's often with the show Friends that happens, little things like that.
All right, so in the final scene of this episode, we're kind of in this like sweet moment between just the two of them, Monica and Chandler, and he confesses that he knows about the baby, and Monica doesn't know what he's talking about, like whose baby, but he tells her about the pregnancy test to be found in the bathroom, and she claims it's definitely not hers. So he asks who it could be, and then we have the camera pan to the girls. Phoebe's crying, saying she's happy and that they're also having a baby and how amazing. But the camera slowly turns towards Rachel's face, who is just nodding with this look of horror. So we kind of are clued in. It's in fact Rachel that's pregnant, not Monica.
Oh, what a crazy ending.
Yes. And that's how the season ends.
Yeah. What a way to end like a Monica episode with Rachel.
I know.
Yeah, that is. And kind of, obviously it's a cliffhanger because they want you to tune in at the beginning of the next season. But a little bit of like the logistics of like the filming of this particular episode, the show for just this part two was filmed over 2 weeks. All of the scenes with Gary Oldman was filmed in the first week, and then the wedding was filmed in the second week, and then just that final shot with Rachel being filmed after the studio audience had left, which is why all you hear is like, you can hear them fake clapping a little bit as like people are celebrating. You like know that
because they didn't want to spoil that.
They didn't want to spoil it. They didn't want audience reaction. There's no live reaction in that part of the episode. So they did only that part of the scene after.
Wow.
She had left.
That's nuts.
After the audience had left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple other like random little, if you guys will like indulge me for just a minute.
Sure.
Some
absolutely.
Like random trivia that just happened everywhere between like last episode and this one. So a little bit of like a jewelry thing. So the necklace that Judy Geller wore in the rehearsal is the same one that Monica wore in the wedding. And then the neck that Monica wore in the rehearsal dinner is the one that Rachel wears as a bridesmaid during the wedding. So they did like a little jewelry roulette.
Oh, fun.
as they went from like one episode to the other. And then it's not brought up as like a major thing during the episode itself. And I think we've even, Llewellyn, I don't know if we even commented on it at one point because we thought like, how had this not happened? But Ben, played by Cole Sprouse, is at the wedding reception, he's seated next to his father at the kids' table to Ross's left, but his presence, like, isn't acknowledged by Ross at all. It's not brought into the episode during the reception or anything.
I wonder why bring him back if you're not going to acknowledge it.
And maybe there was a scene where he was there, or maybe the audience would have been like, so Ben wasn't at like that wedding, and like, it is his aunt's wedding, so like he should be there.
Right.
So I think maybe they just needed him in
Carol
the background.
Carol should also be there, but.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, I know, that family, that's a weird like kind of family dynamic.
Weird dynamics, but.
And then, actually, I think that's it. Those are all the noteworthy ones. Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, nice.
Anything that, like, any other dynamics that you didn't get to say, kind of any other commentary that you had, any other points that you wanted to dive more in on, or rabbit trails that you wanted to take that had to do with this episode? Because obviously, Llewellyn and I are going to continue on, and we're going to hit the next episode, which is the one after I Do, which they then go into the fact that Rachel is pregnant. And we won't know the father until like a couple episodes after that with the red sweater scene. So if you've seen it, if you know, you know, if you don't, you'll have to wait, I guess.
Yeah.
Or go Google it. The information
is out
there.
Do you know if they filmed, like when they filmed the next episode, like were they, did they film it at, like back to back after this stretch and then, wait to film more episodes of season 8 afterwards?
So, you know, I've always thought that that was maybe their strategy, because typically they, Friends is notorious for picking up right where they left off from the last season. However, the thing that makes me think that, no, at the end of a season, they stop and then they just come back and they're, it's not a showrunner, but whoever's in charge of like continuity just keeps all of their notes and they just, they restart at episode 1. It was the gap between, I think it was 6 and 7, Matthew Perry lost a ton of weight. And you can clearly tell when you're binging, like when you end at season 6 and they just got engaged. And then all of a sudden season 7 episode 1 comes on and Matthew Perry looks like he's lost like 40 pounds. You can very clearly tell. So you know that they didn't record those together simply because they were a continuation. So I actually think they just stuck to that schedule. But I haven't done any research to like confirm it. That was the one thing. It was like the evidence of that told me that, well, they definitely didn't
record
at least that. At least that one time.
Yeah. But they are good with like, I think the continuity of that, they must just have to like, okay, picking you need to know exactly like who's wearing what, who looks like what their hairstyles are, take pictures of everybody, because we'll come back in, you know, 3 months and start
and
filming
try
again.
Our best to,
yeah.
I do remember some people's like, I feel like it might've been a, like when they went to the beach kind of deal, and they came back and like their hair were, their hairstyles were a little bit different. I don't remember if that's true or not, but I vaguely remember them having a little bit different hairstyles, or
like maybe they had a, like because of their break over the summer.
Yeah.
Like they're a little bit tanner or something.
Totally.
I love that this is the kind of show though that people would care and notice. It's like there are just some shows where it's like, but people were so like on Friends that it's like, oh, she's a little tanner. Okay, it's okay.
Well, and I wonder if in real time you remembered, because
right, why would you?
After 5 months of not seeing a show, because it ends in May and then it won't start showing again until September. Am I going to remember how their hair looked, or is it only because I'm streaming it?
Yeah.
Because I'm watching the end of season 6 and I'm like, okay, one more episode that I'm like, whoa, Chandler just lost 50 pounds like in front of my eyes.
I do think that conversation has come up more now probably than it did at the time. And it's probably why, because I feel like people really started talking about it once his memoir came out and once like people were able to start streaming Friends like for free. So I've a lot of people have mentioned that, which is kind of sad.
And he was very public about it too, like I don't think he ever really shied away. It's just because of his memoir, it is
like
definitely out there
sense,
now.
Yeah
We did an episode on it when we came out, Llewellyn and I, just like, I mean, I listened to the audiobook at like 3 speed just to like get it done. And then we had like a decomp. I think we spent like maybe 15 or 20 minutes just talking about the book and our thoughts and like recommendations.
Wow. It was good. And things like it that. Was really good.
It was so good. It was heartbreaking
and
too.
And to have it be read from him too is really cool.
Yeah.
Did you read it? It was very special.
Prior
especially
to him passing away or right like after him?
I read it to him
so
prior.
I read it right after he passed away. So like hearing that first line, oh my gosh, where he was like, "Hi, I'm Matthew Perry and I should be dead," or something like that. I just lost it. I was on a plane and oh gosh, it really got me. But
yeah, we listened to it like the moment it came out. Yeah. I had it on like Audible
like
on
2 days
a
later
and
then we recorded. Yeah. It was quick.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we tried to turn
staying
it around
relevant
really fast so that we were on top of it. Yeah, that's the evergreen content.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Okay, so normally what we do after this is we say our favorite scenes from the episode. I know I'm kind of springing it on you guys, but do you guys have a favorite scene?
Let me think back just for a second. I'm going to say it's that Chandler with the onesie scene. Though the wedding is amazing, I could say that that's probably one of my favorite scenes. I think Chandler with the onesie was like his moment of realization and acceptance, and I just, my heart just melted. I just love it.
Love it.
I'm trying to like skim through my notes to see.
Yeah. We Llewellyn
what did
and
I have
did
the most
week
thoughts on?
It's like a good minute when we're not
I
talking.
Really?
Yeah, just thinking about it.
I really like, as a funny scene, the Ross and his dad like hide and seek scene. Like I feel like it's just a fun
cheating, son.
Yes, I love that. That's part it's of it. But one as a growth scene, I love Chandler in his office.
It's a good one.
Like explaining how he's feeling and why he's at the situation that he's in, and then Ross being the best man and stepping up and helping him through it.
That's good. I'll kind of double off of that one, of the dynamic between Ross and his parents.
Yeah.
Because in the previous episode, they also had a moment where, because all the friends are laughing at him because he said that he threatened Chandler, that says like, yes, if you hurt my sister, I'm going to kick your ass. Yeah. And they're all laughing at him. And so you get like this little quick scene where the dad's like, "Of course, son, of course we think that you could." And he's like, "Thanks, guys."
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he's just being pumped up by his parents. Aww. I loved that, like, just their dynamic in these last two episodes has, like, been so, like keyed in that when he's like, "That's cheating, son."
Yeah, so
like,
good.
It's so good. I just thought
the
it was really funny.
He's great. Because I remember in the prior episode as well when he was, like, trying to meet Chandler's dad and he was like, "I couldn't even get to tell her that like I accept her," whatever the line is.
He's like, "I've never seen one before." They're like, "Oh my gosh, shut up." So good. But I also did love where like Ross finally got to actually like attack Chandler in the hallway. It felt like very like vengeance for him.
Yeah,
that felt good.
Okay, I could say all of the above as well, but just to call out another scene and other people, the scene with Rachel trying to stall Monica, just Monica's quick
funny,
like basically just her quick call out, like, "No, like if that's what you want to do, fine, whatever, like let's just move on," like always redirecting it back to her.
Focus on me.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny and Courtney Cox did it brilliantly.
True.
Yes.
Love it. Okay, so then the final thing that we did give you guys a little bit of a heads up on was our recommend to a friend. So this is our segment where, you know, there's just things in life where you get super excited about and you tell people about because you're excited. So we figured this would be a platform where we could do that as well, where we're excited about something we've bought or started doing or a habit we've picked up or stopped or whatever that we could recommend to a friend. It's not a sponsored thing. We don't get paid for it. We just like talking about things that we're excited about. So we invite you guys as well to let us know, are there any things that you would recommend to our friends?
Okay, yes.
Besides your own podcast.
I have a lot of things in my
head.
I'm one of these people.
They're like, go to the We Ship It podcast.
Listen to our podcast. No, I'm just kidding. The thing is, I am one of these people that I always try every new gimmicky thing. I'm just like that. And some of them stick and some of them don't. And something I've really, really started doing is a lot of meal prep. So I do that on Sunday. And what I would recommend if you're a big meal prepper is these little 1 cup soup freezing. Like, this is so random. But so, I don't know if you know about this, but they're like little rubber, like almost they look like...
Like silicone molds?
Silicone molds.
For super?
Yep, for soup. And they're like 1 cup yes. each. So if you make soup, you can put it in there and then freeze it. That's what it is. And so...
I have those.
So let me tell you, the reason that I use them is because after I make any chicken dish, I put all of my like leftover like little pieces I didn't use and I make broth mm-hmm. and then I just like freeze them in the cups. And man, it has been so helpful the amount of times I'm like, I need broth and I didn't buy it. It's like, oh, here you go. So that's my thing. Get yourself some of those.
Look yeah, at you.
I love it.
I love that. If you have a specific one that you're recommending...
I forget what it's called.
Send us a link or something. Otherwise, I'm sure I can like go on Amazon. Yeah. But we like to link them in our show notes sure. so that our friends have a like, direct like access to yeah. them.
Sounds good.
All right, Devin.
Mine was also going to be food related.
Yeah,
we love that. We love that.
So I live in my own apartment now. So one thing that I've done, and actually Steph kind of got me into it. Is prepackaged meals, but like I'm trying, like what are they called? The food they
the one that like gets delivered.
Oh, delivery? Every like plate you're talking about.
Yes. So
oh yeah, okay.
Done that.
So before. Like I get 3 meals a week, and then I have like leftover, so I can bring it to lunch and that kind of sort. So it's been great in the terms of me just picking things and not really having to like mentally plan and then go to the store. Like I still go to the store, don't get me wrong, but like I have a smaller list of what I need from the store. And it definitely helps in not having to do all the thought process, especially with my busy schedule of teaching, and then I have theater, so some nights I don't even get home until whatever time, and then so it's been very nice to have something already like
figured out
and know that that's something that I don't have to like worry about throughout the week. I mean, I still have to say like, okay, when I'm going to make stuff, mm-hmm. but I at least can spend my time more wisely there.
Proud of you, Devin. I love everything.
Thanks.
That's awesome. All right, Llewellyn.
Nice. Okay, cool. Mine's not food related, so totally fine, but
nice. Switch it up.
I just did this last night, so I'm going to talk about it. So our friends know that I'm a theater nerd. I absolutely love the theater. And I can't know which one I'm going to talk about. And last night I had like a free night. I had nothing to do. And I literally Googled in my area, like shows in my area. There's like a bunch of little random theaters, or we have a couple like performing arts theaters that bring Broadway shows in. And so I was like, is there anything on a Saturday night I could just go to last minute? Turns out Hadestown was at the place
Sweet.
Close by.
I just went to the city to see smile. That last week.
That's amazing.
Nice. Yes. So I literally, I walked in and I was like, look, I want one ticket. I was like, give me a ticket under $100. I'm fine. And the theater that I went and saw it in is like very open. There's no overhang for like mezzanine or anything. So any seat is a great seat. Right. And I am a little ashamed to say that I didn't jump on the bandwagon for this show off the bat, like when it first came out. I have a lot of friends that like told me I should listen to it. I should be obsessed with it. But my problem with listening to musicals is that if I listen to them, I become so obsessed that I have to figure out how to see them. And just my bank would not appreciate that. So that's probably why I never jumped on this train fast enough. But I did know some of the music going into it, and I can honestly say I was blown away. The talent, the amount of times I was just like brought to chills, like how quiet it gets and you're just like anticipating what's going to happen next. It was good. If you have the opportunity to go see Hadestown, if it's in your area at any
the
point
the lighting
in time,
and Wait For Me,
oh my gosh,
so
literal cheers
inside.
Chills. Yes.
Yeah, so I, like I said, I just went to see it in the city last weekend, and it was when Jordan Fisher had the flu, so he wasn't like performing.
Oh,
in
that's
it.
A bummer.
So I got his understudy, but his understudy was amazing too. And I actually forgot that he was actually performing in it, so I was like, oh, I'm sad now that I'm sitting in and looking at that there's a sheet there that says that he's not going to be in it. But I didn't realize it at the time that he was in it. But it is one of my, it's been one of my favorites to like listen to. Mm-hmm. I think the music is super catchy. I think songs are catchy, like certain songs are catchy, but I don't think like each song is super memorable, but like the story of it. I mean, it's so good. A classic. It's Eurydice. Orpheus and Eurydice, so it's a great like bring something that's considered dead and making it meaningful to a new audience. I think it's so cool.
Yeah, you know, it was good. The guy that where do I live, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, do you like, you don't have to give me specifics, but like how do you just like manage to look up just look up like theater shows in my area and be able to just attend one?
Well, I mean, I live in Sarasota, Florida. Not afraid to say that. But we have a performing arts hall, the Van Wezel. It's pretty, it's not super big, but they're like over the moon because they somehow managed to get Hamilton to come here. It doesn't seat enough people for Hamilton's level, but they managed to do it. I'm a Hamilton out. I've seen it 3 times in the last 3 years. So nothing against it, great show, see it 5,000 times more.
I'll watch it forever into eternity.
The only one I can get to go to,
it's like the only Broadway I love.
Devin, we have a few little theaters around here if you ever want to come. I know Something Rotten is playing really near to us, and I love Rotten, so if you want to come,
yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
Let's do it. We'll have to see if there's anything when I visit next month.
You should Awesome. Yeah, I'm going to New York next week actually to see Sweeney Todd.
Who's in that now?
It will be Aaron Tveit and Sutton Foster, which is the reason I'm going.
Oh shoot.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Sweeney Todd. I saw it at a local production. It's
spooky.
It's you know, like
I'm not going for the show.
When I go see a show,
Yeah,
when I go see a show, like I don't necessarily want to just be succumbed in darkness. Yeah. There's enough darkness in the world. I don't need it for 2 more hours.
But Aaron Tveit and Sutton Foster.
I'm interested to see how they'll do in those roles because I just feel like they're not typical roles for the two of them. So. Yeah. It'll be interesting, but I'm excited either way.
One show I definitely want to see before it gets off Broadway, and it's not a musical. I want to see Harry Potter.
Me too. I've been trying for years. I'm sorry. We're like tangent right now.
Yeah. No.
I know. Sorry. I did it. It's fine. Leanne, we'll get to you eventually.
It's okay. It was great talking to you. Bye. You guys can finish without me.
I have The Cursed Child on my shelf, but I was told never to read it, so I just never picked it up off the shelf. But I heard that they condensed the show into one show now. It used to be 2 shows they had to buy 2 different tickets for. I'm like, that's kind of insane. Yeah. And now they condensed it to 1 show. And I heard that some of the magic, quote unquote magic, that they do in the show is so fantastical that I'm dying to see it, just to see like what it's like. Not for the storyline, because whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But just for the theatrical magic that they do on stage.
Yeah, no, same.
Okay, so
go ahead, Leanne.
Can I talk?
Take over, Leanne. Thank you.
It's like getting permission to talk on my own podcast. Let me raise my hand. No, I'm just kidding. I'm glad that you guys are geeking out together. I had a friend. Her and her husband went over to London, and they went and saw The Cursed Child, and it is 2 parts over there. But in America, they feel like that we don't have the attention span or the endurance to be able to do it. So they literally put it into just the 1 show, but it's because they condensed it by like an hour.
Yeah, they took a huge chunk out.
They took such a big chunk out. And my friend was like, I will never see the New York version because it was so good.
Yeah.
Just the full version. So I'm like, I guess I probably have to take a trip to London if I want to see it because might as well. But
why not?
Yeah, they did take
a big chunk. Okay, mine is also definitely not food related. I I have a really shallow couch and not a lot of storage opportunities, so I needed to find like a under, usually you do like under the bed storage, yeah. but I needed it to be like a solid format because I wanted to be able to hold like books and stuff under there. And when you have those fabric ones and you're trying to push a bunch of books, I was afraid that they were going to all like morph and like break together, you know? So I found these under bed storage with like little, like low grade wheels. So it's only like 5.1 inches, like, tall, so it has a really shallow height to it, and the wheels are like the little, not like the full rolly wheels, but almost like lip gloss type of wheels, where it's like the little ball inside, like just spins. And so with how shallow it is, I'm able to stack like a couple books, and then it's like long enough and wide enough that it like fits perfectly under each little section of my couch. So how I could have them like all the way around. And with a place that like does not have any storage anywhere, it was so nice to be able to add just like even a couple of those under the couch. So for those of you who have like really shallow areas that you need to maybe just find areas for storage, I found these on Amazon. They work great. They're so easy to assemble. And then if you don't want to use them in a moment, or you're trying to, you know, move things around, they fold up really shallow as well for like storing them if you don't need them at the moment. So I'll link those, but they're really just under the bed storage containers, and they worked great for their heavy duty. They work great for my books, and I don't feel like I'm ruining my books as I pull them out because they're not shifting in space.
That's awesome.
So I recommend those to a friend. So, okay. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, it was fun.
Super fun.
Thanks for having us.
So glad we got you on this episode.
Yeah.
I've been holding off on listening to your ACOTAR, episodes because I haven't read the whole series. And I know you guys are covering like the expanse of the relationship, but I was like, I can't have any spoilers. So
we only did
I literally have those saved.
We only did cover the first five books. I know there's like other pieces. So we didn't know that there were other pieces.
There are other series. Started. Yeah.
So that's really where our knowledge extends to, so you know.
We picked it up. I was like, oh, it's a box set, that means that it must be done,
and we were wrong.
I know, it's crazy. The only series of her that is completed is Throne of Glass.
Right.
Throne of Glass, yes. And I looked at that books. And I was like, yes, I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's way too many. Five is much more.
We're gonna have to do Throne of Glass next, everyone tells us.
Yeah. And then Crescent City is three books now, but they're now all like this thick, so
they're super chunky.
They're so chunky. So I'm trying to hold off on those before I actually finish ACOTAR so I can like listen back. So for those of you, like I said, they already explained like the concept of their podcast, so go on to We Ship It and then look at their backlog to see, you know, couples that you want to hear all the little ins and outs of. Go visit our episode where we talked about Chandler and Monica in depth. We spent like 2 hours talking about them. So it was so fun. But then they also talked about a couple of the other relationships that happened throughout the course, which was really fun to listen to as like just a listener. So thank you guys so much. Thanks for giving some of your time to us today. And we'd love to do this at least one more time before the series ends. Mm-hmm. I know that there's like some other, like really another storyline with Chandler and Monica that would be cool to cover with you guys.
Just let us know.
So
we have a ton of fun with this. So
love it. Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks you guys. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks.
Awesome. That was a great interview. I love Stephanie and Devin. I feel like they have such great energy. I always love having guys on because we're such a girl-heavy podcast. Mm-hmm. So last week with the guys and then this week with, you know, one in one, I just like that there's a different perspective to the entire conversation that we're getting. So thank you again to Stephanie and Devin. We loved having them on. So that is the conclusion of season 7, which I can't believe. So next week, we're going to cover the first week of season 8, the one after I Do.
Yeah. So we'll catch you guys next week on the Wall and the Friends podcast.